What's going on, everyone? This is Izzy.
And charisma.
And you're listening to Off Script. And going off script, we are off time. Because to be off script means that there is no set time.
Good things happen to those who wait.
Yeah, the radio host said that we were 25 minutes late today. However, we were an hour and 25 minutes late because I think we talked about doing 11:30 on Fridays. But, there's my alarm telling me that I am needed. But I see nowhere more important than being here in this room talking on this mic to you listeners right now.
We have our priorities straight.
Speaking of that, what are we talking about today?
Harm reduction
Okay.
in Long Beach. So there's a new program being launched by I think the Long Beach Health Department and Services. And they're launching a new thing where they're going to start supplying Narcan and other harm reductive tools to kind of lower the rate of like overdoses and like harmful drug use in Long Beach, like that.
This is where I need you to educate me because although I am all for nobody overdosing and nobody harming themselves and people getting healed and healthy, I don't fully grasp what harm reduction means. And some of the things I've heard have been very confusing to me, which, like a needle exchange, for example. You give me one of your dirty needles, I'm going to give you 50 clean needles, right? That just seems silly to me. But there are other things that are harm reduction where it's, hey, come over here, we're going to help you detox, but we have to do it in a certain way so that you don't kill yourself, which makes sense to me. So I need help understanding harm reduction.
So the point of harm reduction is, as far as I'm aware, is that if people are struggling with addiction, at the end of the day, like you can provide as many rehabilitation programs as possible, but in the case that they relapse or something like that, how can we let people, go through their journey of addiction but safely? Because like at the end of the day, like they're gonna do it, and so let's help people do it safely. And so if that means giving somebody clean needles and they're not ready to go through the journey of becoming sober and going through rehab, then at least let them be safe. It's kind of like the standpoint. And it started, I think, in Portugal, was like one of those first countries to implement harm reduction in terms of like drug addiction in their country. And they saw like amazing results, which is why it's starting to be implemented in other places like here. And it was implemented in San Francisco, but we got a very different result. Unfortunately, which is why there's a really bad fentanyl crisis in SF right now. So.
I'm trying to think. So, this analogy doesn't work completely in that harm reduction, in the way you're talking about, is a person harming themselves versus gun control. The idea is that a person will not harm others. So, we can't necessarily compare the two. But it almost seems to me like if somebody has a gun and I don't know the PC term, so you could correct me. They're crazy and they're going to go shoot people. We don't want to stop them in their journey of crazy. So what we're going to do is we're going to give them different kinds of bullets. That's what it sounds like. Again, harm reduction isn't, these guys are stabbing other people with their needles. So that's why the analogy breaks down there. But it's almost like, why not just take away the thing?
Well, I don't know if there's a diagnosis for people being addicted to using guns, versus like drug addiction.
Yeah, probably not.
And then there's that like analogy where like guns don't kill people, people kill people. And I think with drug addiction, it the most harm that's being caused is to the person who's experiencing drug addiction. And like that's its own personal struggle, and we don't have enough like social services really to provide the assistance and preventative measures to stop what's already becoming a crisis. And I think we're at the point where like the most that the United States can do is provide harm reduction, because it was kind of the big proponent and the reason why we have an opioid crisis, why we have a fentanyl crisis, is because of the pharma in the United States. Whereas like somewhere like Portugal, I don't know if they had that kind of system, but they were realizing that a problem was occurring and put in preventative measures, and it's greatly reduced the number of overdoses in their country. Whereas like here, we're kind of putting a band-aid on an issue that's already really festered to the point where it's kind of like there's no return.
I guess when I think of people who are struggling with something, and again, I know the term changed from substance abuse to substance misuse some years ago. I don't know if it's
misuse
still or whatever.
I think so.
But it seems like person A was living. They're in the garden, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then the apple came, and that is the thing that caused addiction. And now they are stuck in that addiction, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't pull the rug out from underneath them because that could kill somebody. I think if somebody's on heroin, you can't just take heroin, right?
Okay. Right. Same thing with alcohol, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I understand the concept of, okay, we've got to wean this person off so that they don't die and that they can be healthy. But I guess it's that concept of they are in the journey of addiction. So let's help them be in the journey of addiction safely. That I always struggle with, because I'm like, let's get them on a new journey.
Well, yeah, but some people aren't ready for that. And, you know, even having a conversation about your journey and in addiction is like hard to talk about. And a judgment-free zone is also part of like the stigma. And so harm reduction is also being able to walk into a clinic and be like, hey, I need clean needles, and not to be met with like a face or a bunch of questions, and to just kind of get comfortable even talking about it. Which, in being comfortable talking about it, may lead that person to actually seeking rehabilitation. So it's just like an extra layer of just kindness and compassion that I think is really necessary, because the communities that experience increased addiction are usually people that are unhoused, people experiencing mental health problems, and we already don't have services for those things. So the least we could do is give out needles. But I feel like if we have money for that, then why can't we produce safe housing? Why can't we produce mental health services? So I wonder where the money's being allocated. I think a lot of our social services rather put band-aids than actual preventative measures in place. But that's just me.
Well, that's where I think the script is. I think you nailed it there, because we, for example, yesterday I was helping a gentleman who said, hey, I used crystal meth yesterday. I am coming off of being drunk today. I had alcohol this morning. I want to detox. I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be on the street. I don't want to die to this. Can you help me? And it's like, okay, let's call detox places. I called 4. 2 didn't answer. One said, and this is on a Thursday, we could give you an appointment for Monday at 8 a.m. So that's a long ways away for somebody.
Right.
One said, we could give you an appointment tomorrow, Friday, for 10 a.m. Okay, got to make it through the night. Tough. Called another agency that I was referred to, and they said, oh, we don't do detox here. Called one more, and they said, you know what, just take them to the emergency room, and the emergency room will deal with that. But with this person, and I brought that up with the person, and they said, no, I've been to the emergency room before. What they do is they put you in a place where it comes out of your system, and then they just let you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just go find the next thing, because I needed my system again. I need a place that's going to help me detox, keep me in sober living, and then help me actually beat this thing.
Right.
So I'm like, why did these people not answer the? You have one job, mm-hmm. and I'm calling you to do your job, and you don't answer your phone, left message, still haven't got a call back. We ended up getting this guy a bus pass to do his appointment today at 10 a.m. and tried to keep him occupied between, you know, 4 o'clock yesterday to 10 a.m. today, so that he wouldn't relapse and miss his appointment. So, you know, we did what we could with that. But this is before your time, and it's a little bit before my time. But there was a time when people in white coats would drive around in a van, and if somebody was acting, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes, crazy, they would say, hey, buddy, what's going on? And they would actually have them come into the van, and they would take them to an institution where they were supposedly going to get help. Those got shut down in during the Reagan era, not necessarily because of Reagan, but during the Reagan era, because some of the doctors were taking advantage of some of the patients. Right. So I'm wondering, can we go back to part of that where there's actually places where people can go? And I don't know if they're padded walls or whatnot. I don't know what it looks like. It should look very comforting, should be very safe, warm, but a place where they get it weaned out. And then after it's weaned out, there's counseling. There's a place for them to live, by the way. There's this bed, there's food and whatnot, and give them 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it is for that particular person to be able to get released to the street, where they're not going to first turn to crystal meth or to cocaine or to whatever it is, but they've been safe for 30 to 120 days, whatever it is, have gotten some counseling. It's out of their system. There's no doctor messing with them. And in sober living, there's drugs being passed around, I've heard. So there's no drugs being passed around. They've actually have 120 days where they've ate, slept, gotten clean. And now when they're released, they're being released into hope as opposed to failure.
Right. Well, there is places like that, and it's where celebrities go, and they cost hundreds and thousands of dollars.
So they do exist.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why when you see your favorite celebrity disappear for like 6-8 months and they're in rehabilitation, that's what they're doing. They're doing detox. They're doing counseling. They're in a safe place. They're getting the help that they need. They're being released to the public. Like, that kind of service is not, like, at least at that quality, isn't really offered for people that don't even have health insurance, don't even have documents because they're living on the street. They don't have anything.
So the people that are worth saving get those treatments.
Yeah, like services like that aren't like super open to the public. I'm not going to sit here and say they don't exist for the public, but they're not, like you said, you call places, they're not readily available for the public. So especially for the demographic that is really suffering. So
that's really sad.
It is. It's devastating. That's why San Francisco is so heartbreaking for me to even talk about. Somebody asked me about it today. They're like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, SF. And they're like, oh, I've heard of the Tenderloin. And I was like, yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. And they're like, what is it like? And I'm like, it's different than Skid Row, I would say. But then they're like, how? And I was like, well, like, it's just different. I can't really explain it. I think it's because I'm from there, and just seeing how we try to implement the harm reduction model there, and it just completely was not implemented with I think the level of care that kind of program needs. It just was set up a bunch of tents, give out a bunch of needles, and all of a sudden the floors of Market Street were filled with needles and feces, and just it was horrifying. It was exponential. I was 17, and like, we already had a homelessness crisis, and it was very evident. I didn't think it could get any worse, and it absolutely did. Absolutely did.
Sorry that you had to be part of that.
It was horrifying. And every time I go back home now for the holidays, I'm like, how does it get worse? Like, how? Yeah. It does. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it weren't all about people with money and people of status and people just cared about people, those places where people disappear and then they get released when they're ready and they can actually enter society and be productive, that would make this the better place. That would make our streets better, our cities better, and our people who are actually, I mean, there are some people who are struggling with stuff that maybe if they got clean, they could be the person who discovers the cure for cancer, because maybe they're that much of a genius, and that, I don't know if you call it geniusness or whatever it is, led them to need a substance because they were thinking way outside of the box, coming up with these crazy things. Nobody was able to understand them. They now they're on substance, but if they had the outlet where they could actually use their genius to do something great. But then again, it would be the script ruined, because then we would need the pharmacy.
Right.
We need the pills and the drugs that they push on us, and they would lose their billions of dollars, because everything would be given out. So I think that's the script. Mm-hmm. That's why it's not going to get clean, and that's why people aren't going to matter. It's because they want to push their drugs and their agendas so they can make their money. And those drugs are just band-aids, like you said, because they don't actually heal you. They just help you in that moment, and you need to continue to be on them to live the rest of your life, which you're paying for.
You know, did you hear about Elon Musk? And he made this like microchip, and the first human has now received this brain microchip that's supposed to help with like mental health disorders. And I don't know, somebody said you could buy a house with your brain or something like that. I don't know. But Elon's doing something out there. I think it's concerning. I'm just putting that out there.
Wait, so you put a chip in your head and it heals your mental health?
That's what he's claiming. But it's also Elon Musk. I don't believe a word that comes out of that man's mouth. But right. Yeah.
So I'm assuming you don't drive a Tesla.
No. Well, and apparently they barely drive themselves. Apparently two Teslas both crashed on the same side of the LA highway, whatever which one it is, in the same area. Both of them crashed at the same spot. These self-driving cars.
Maybe that's where the like alien radar like broke down, so it could go.
It's so like I think the people in the car survived the crash, but it was like they can't drive in the rain. They're not cars for terrain at all.
It's like the submersible that went to go down to see the Titanic and hit
yeah,
because it's like yeah,
Ocean Gate.
Yeah, billions of dollars to build this thing. But there's no regulation to make sure it actually is going to work. You just go and do it and bring a kid with you while you're at it.
Right.
And it just implodes.
There's a lot of commentary about a bunch of billionaires going down into the ocean to look at a ship that, like, the people that died on it were poor because the people that were, like, they locked the ones that were in the lower class in. They locked them in when the Titanic was going down. And so the people that got away were the ones that had the higher class tickets. And so for a bunch of billionaires to go down to look at the Titanic and the people that died on it were the people that were locked in. It's just like people had a lot to say. And it was interesting because I was on TikTok when it was happening and people didn't feel bad. They're like, these billionaires made a dumb decision and they went and they did the thing that they did. And it's like, it was just kind of like a moral dilemma. Like, how do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel?
Dave Chappelle said it was a funny way to die.
I'm not going to say anything on City Art Radio, but it was a very interesting time to watch it happen. And like, there was a countdown. There was a countdown to when it's going to implode. And I was like, this is so, I don't think this has ever happened in like human history like this, like to watch a countdown. And it's like, yeah.
What's the countdown? Because for a minute, they didn't even know what happened to it, right?
Well, yeah, there was that. And then they're like, well, they only have a certain amount of air left.
Right.
And then the countdown started for how many hours of air they
had. Gotcha, yeah. But they had already died at that point. We just didn't know it.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, because when they found like all the different pieces, they gathered that, you know, when they lost communication was actually when the thing imploded.
Oh, wow.
And so then when they thought it's just lost and they had this countdown of how much air they had, it was irrelevant at that point because they were already gone. I don't know if that's an instant death or a very painful death.
I was told that implosion is like a vacuum and it's instant. That's what I was told.
Well, then that's good. I'd rather somebody not suffer than...
Right.
You know, drowning would suck.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's very ironic. I remember the movie Titanic where they locked him in. Although in the movie, he lets him out at the end, but probably didn't happen in real life.
Right.
But I mean, that is a cruel irony or maybe a, I don't know, some kind of an irony of the billionaires going down to see the poor who
die.
The billionaires who have a choice going down to see the poor who didn't have a choice.
Exactly.
And all dying the same.
Yep.
They all have the same watery grave and... They all have the same, you don't get to take anything with you after this life. We don't know. Afterlife, it's just all done. You reincarnate, whatever it is, your time here is done.
It's done, yeah.
And you are no different.
The fact that they called that submersible Ocean Gate is what is just, Ocean Gate was just ridiculous. You know, it was controlled by a game controller?
I did know that.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Aye. Well... I mean, as long as we live in a world where currency is king, there will actually never be true compassion, charity, because that means you're not getting paid.
I feel like we talk about this every time.
Yeah.
And it just comes right back around to greed, corruption.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
as far as, I mean, the Catholics will call greed one of the seven deadly sins. You know, if you're a Bible reading person, you know, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And it's essentially, I'm going to step on you so that I can get higher. You know, you talk about equity. If there are three people who are all different heights looking at a 6-foot fence, you don't give them each a 2-foot box because that's going to work for one, but the other two are still going to not have enough. So you got to give one person a 3-foot box, one person a 4-foot box, one person a 2-foot box so that they can all have the same eyesight over the fence.
Yep.
So if you look at, and I'm definitely not a socialist or a communist, but you look at, if there weren't currency, there weren't, I am this wealthy person with all this stuff and I can get more power by stomping on you. But there was this sense of everybody starts here, and yeah, you can work hard and do some other things, but everybody starts here and everybody has the same access to any resource that you need to continue to be here, then that would be a way to go, where the only way you can go is up, because we're making sure that you can't go down. We are a safety net for anybody, so that the minimum thing that you get is a safe place to live, health, and good food.
It sounds like community.
And then you have all these people that are like, well, no, because my plastic that you're not going to use, I'm going to lose money. My fast food that you're not going to eat, I'm going to lose money. My medication that I want you to be stuck on for the rest of your life, you're not going to need, so I'm going to lose money. That all goes away because they're not going to get the money anyway. And we're not allowing stuff that can kill people. We're not allowing plastic or styrofoam. Somebody invents this thing, says, look, I invented plastic. We're like, guess what? That's not welcome here. So invent something else.
Well, it sounds like native communities before colonization, so, because that exists and we know what it looks like, and there's a reason why it doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting is that we've entered the Age of Aquarius, and I'm going to be on my soapbox, because the Age of Aquarius, the last time it happened, which I think was the French Revolution, the fall of an empire is every 250 years. So like the Roman Empire, French, and now we've entered the time where it's us. And so people are kind of saying that like, these conversations that we're having are happening a lot more often among communities that didn't used to talk about it. And so now it's kind of signaling to, you know, people that study history, that it's kind of like the end of an empire, which is like the United States is an empire. And so we've hit this point where it's been like a 250-year run and there's a stalemate. It's like everyone's suffering. What do we do? Only 1% are thriving, and we're all super aware of it now. So.
Well, I know in history, the thought was when the empire went to a certain spot, another empire would come and wipe them out, and then they would come, right? And you referenced a few in our modern history. You know, you go back to in Canaan, which would have been like the native land, you know, and then you've got the people of Israel become a great nation, and they're defeated by the Babylonians, and then the Babylonians are defeated by the Persians, and then the Persians are defeated by the Greeks, and then the Greeks are defeated by the Romans, and then for I think the longest standing empire is the Ottoman Empire, if I'm not mistaken, and then yeah, you got United States in there, and I'm wondering, is it the United States that is the empire, or is it like the allies of all the different countries that is the empire? Is it all of the non-allied countries who, at least from what we understand, seek to kill everybody else, like the North Koreas, or is that the empire? What is the empire right now? Or is it everybody is their own empire, but the United States is just the greatest one right now?
I don't know. I just know the United States is an empire, and that it's been going on for about 250 years, and that it's hit a wall in terms of like mobility of its people. Like you said, we're so focused, the powers are so focused about the medication and the money and the greed, to the point where it's kind of lost sight of like the civilians that make up an empire. Hence why it will fall, because the civilians are suffering. So it's like, that's the end of an empire, you know? But I think the end of this empire is gonna look a lot different than what we've historically seen, because we live in a completely different age, like complete, everything's so different, like technology, just education, everything is so different. And so I don't know what the end of an empire will look like now. And I'm not sure if that means another group taking over. I'm not sure if that just means civilians actually standing up for themselves. I don't know what that looks like, but I know if I can feel it coming. There's definitely a shift happening. I'm not sure it's going to happen in my lifetime, but it's definitely happened.
Yeah. Yeah. In any post-apocalyptic like movie or TV show, you see what happens is the government sends in the military, and then usually the military ends up killing the civilians or bombing the civilians because the outbreak is in that area and you got to just clear it, right? But you understand, it's not the soldier who's pulling the trigger or even the one who's dropping the bomb who said, this is what we should do. It's the person in power who says, this is your order, and because this is your job, you have to do this. Because I look at those and immediately you want to go, okay, the army is bad or the military is bad because they're coming and killing people. And you think, well, these guys didn't all group up together and say we should do this. These guys are getting orders and that person's getting in the order. So it's the script writer, again, that's saying, I want to be safe and I want to make sure these select people are safe. And there's an outbreak over here, so bomb the heck out of them and kill anybody, whether they're affected or not, because I don't even want the chance of that infection to hit the people that are important or who are important. So you are given an order, do this. And that type of cleansing we've seen in our history. It's an ugly history where you have a dictator or whomever killing off everybody else because they believe this is the pure race. I mean, the easiest one is Hitler.
Yeah, eugenics. Right? Yeah.
But you also had it with Saddam Hussein. You also had it in some of the other genocides where it's, we've got to get rid of this line and our line's got to survive. And like I said, I'm a patriot. I love being an American. And I would hope that we would never be that as an empire.
We are that.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I believe that there are bad people in this empire. But I believe as an ethos of an empire that for as many bad people as there are, there's a hopefully an equal amount, if maybe there's less, because I do think that they're more evil than good, fighting back. And I'm hoping that's the struggle right now of we don't want to be that, where we are protecting the select few at the expense of all these others who are the outbreak infected.
Are you talking about civilians or people in power?
Well, usually the people in power, who can also be infected, by the way, say, we have billions of dollars, so we're going to find a cure so that those of us who are infected, we can heal. But those who don't matter, just destroy them, wipe them out so that we don't have a bunch of infected happening.
Are you saying that you don't know if that's happening, or you hope that's not happening?
Well, in the post-apocalyptic films, it's usually because of some virus or some bacteria, right? Which we talked about last October. I'm not sure if that's going to actually happen now, but what I do believe is happening now is this way of life. We've got the threat of nuclear war. We've got the threat of rebellion, of civil war. We've got the threat of needing martial law because there's just so much rioting and so much violence and gun violence and whatnot, to the point where a person in power says, this is getting a little too close to home. We want to protect this way of thinking. And so anybody outside of this box, they are the enemy. And that is its own people. It is your own countrymen and countrywomen, country people, whatever. And I'm hoping that America never becomes that fully. I believe that there are people who have had power that have done that to different groups, but then I've seen in our history those groups kind of rise back up and get support. So I haven't actually seen one group actually be wiped out. Obviously, before I was born, the Native Americans were that, right? But that was before the United States was the power. They were coming in, conquering, they were the colonizers. Once it became the power, I haven't seen anything in our history that I've seen some other nations do where it's, we're gonna wipe out this people.
I think we do it in a way that is probably different than you're used to seeing, but we definitely do it, like, by supporting powers that are willing to do it. Like, we're seeing that right now. the UN just voted on a ceasefire again. And guess who raised their hands against it? The United States. And so...
You talking about Gaza Strip?
Yeah, they just did it right now. So homegirl raised her hand and against a ceasefire, even though I don't remember her name, but she's the representative for the UN in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she raised her hand against a ceasefire. And all the other nations there, besides whoever else, were voting for a ceasefire. Because it's gotten to the point where it's like, they're bombing Rafah, and it's like, what are we doing? But the United States voted against it. And so that's, to me, signals direct support in an ethnic cleansing and in a genocide. And so even though we're not doing it directly here, even though we kind of did with the war on drugs and stigmatizing Black folks with and associating them with drugs, that is a form of cleansing, but we're supporting a different kind of form of that through what Israel is doing to Palestinians.
According to New York Times, which I'm not advocating that they are right, this says the United States on Tuesday cast the sole vote against the United
Nations. Well, there you go. So my point still stands. So we are doing that, and we do that all over the place, all the time, especially like inserting our powers into the Middle East when it's not necessary. That's also another way of just like inciting violence in places where nobody requested our aid. So
instead of being the direct hammer doing it, it's using agents of being,
it's by proxy, which is still just as damaging. So
it's like the remote control submersible.
Yeah, and then that in doing it that way, it makes the public be like, well, we're not doing it. It doesn't look like it. That's not what I'm used to seeing. So then it's not happening. It's like, well, because you don't see it the way that you're used to seeing doesn't mean tactics don't evolve.
So that's a good point, because in Nazi Germany, you had a lot of Germans who were absolutely against the Nazis, and many of them got killed and hanged, with signs that said, I would not support my country, or I would not support Hitler, or I'm a coward, or whatnot.
There was a lot of Germans that weren't even aware of concentration camps. Like, a lot of them didn't even know it was happening. And so, that's impossible now, like, with technology, like, too many people are aware, so tactics develop. And that they're still enacting the same kind of damage, though. So,
although, if they are hiding aliens, we still don't know about it.
Somebody said that they talked about aliens as a distraction to take away from what's happening in world news, and to just be like, oh, get them to talk about aliens. Nobody cares about the aliens. Like, somebody said, if there's aliens, why do I have to still go to work? Why do I have to still go to work if there's aliens?
What's create going? Crash landings and create mummies.
Yeah.
You know, Paige and I saw a mummy of an alien. Obviously, we don't know if it's real. It's probably not, but it was in Arizona.
Oh, okay.
It's this place called The Thing, and you go through this maze, and it talks about civilization from dinosaurs up into, you know, the Kennedy era and where we are now. And then you go to the end, and there's this mummy laying in, like, a sarcophagus. Or No, those are closed. Well, I guess, yeah, actually it was, but it's a clear one, and it looks like an alien.
Interesting.
So I didn't believe it was real. However, if they are actually in the news making these UFOs that are actually flown by people that know what they're identified flying objects, and they're making it seem like, oh, aliens are here because it's a distraction, that would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Which bums us out because we want there to be aliens.
I mean, sure. Like, yeah, I don't know. Do you know about the mummy paint thing?
The mummy what?
Mummy paint.
Mummy paint?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Because you brought up mummies. So, back in the days when, I think it was like the British, the English, I don't know. They were going up in the tombs and taking the mummies and crushing up their remains and turning it into paint. And some of them even ingested.
Never heard of that.
Mummy remains. Yeah. So if you look up, there was a paint that was called like mummy brown or something like that. And it was made out of actual mummies in Egypt that they took. And then sometimes they consumed them.
But why?
I don't know.
Who thinks to do that?
It's like probably a power trip. There's the same reason, like that's some of the rationale behind cannibalism too.
But you have to literally think, there are a bunch of dead decomposing bodies. Why don't we go dig them up, eat them, and make them into paint?
Yeah. Sick times. That's who's founded this country, is the mindset. Like that's where colonization, it's like a power
Holy
thing.
Yeah, that's just weird.
You colonize somebody's body and their sacred place of like of death, like that's a whole different type of power.
That's like poltergeist activity right there,
man. Yeah, like to consume somebody like that, it's power.
Well, yeah, I don't even know. I've never heard of that. You know, I actually wish I didn't know that, but thank you for telling me.
My apologies.
But no, I've heard of atrocities that people do to other people. I haven't necessarily heard of doing it to dead people. I've heard of people hating a certain group so much that they dig up their graves and dismantle their bodies because they hate that group.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's part of it's like
power.
But yeah, and cannibalism, like I know of a place where I haven't been there, but there's a documentary on a place where you can actually go and have them skin part of your leg or whatever so you can eat yourself.
Whoa. I didn't know that.
Delicacy. Yeah, it's whoa. Weird.
Did not know that.
Like, ew, I tasted my thigh. It's
oh my
good. And yeah, people know. Saying like, no, human meat's really good. And they're talking about this and you're just like, how is this?
Whoa.
Why are you giving this an audience, first of all? You know, I get you want to make a thing and like, this is a crazy thing going on, but you're empowering this thing that's going to be very scary because guess what? If there's ever an apocalypse and there are a few people living and those cannibals survive, that's going to be their food source.
Giving people a taste for it. Yeah. But wow, I'm sure an experience like that is very expensive.
It's true that if a dog eats human flesh because maybe the person died and a dog ate it, that they automatically put that dog down.
Mm.
I think you should automatically put a cannibal down.
Shoot.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people that I think that we should put down, but let's talk about that another day.
Where is this episode gone?
Let's get really off script here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could say a lot about cannibalism. Unfortunately, I have a lot to say about cannibalism, but I will spare you because it's not spooky season.
Wait, are you going to be here for spooky season?
I fully intend on still volunteering.
That we're talking part. About cannibals.
Okay.
Because I am fascinated by things that I don't understand, and I want to know the mindset behind, like the mummy thing. I want to look into that now and figure out why somebody would even have had that thought. It would never enter my mind to dig up a dead body and eat it. So yeah. What? Where did that come? It came from somewhere. Where?
Yeah.
Oh, this is where being a Christian gives me like an easy pass because I just go, oh, it's demonic.
Well, I think a lot of the people that did it were like religious nobles in England. Man. Yeah, it's a power thing. Power structures manifest in very different ways. So,
well, cannibalism is a sin according to the Bible. So these nobles,
well, they translated it, so they must have just took it out.
Ugh.
Yeah,
that's why I actually. Side note, the reason I studied Hebrew and Greek
mm-hmm.
was growing up in the church and, you know, being taught all these things in Sunday school, not bad things, love people, be nice, do good things, da da da. Learning about, you know, communion, which in itself is kind of weird because you're like, wait, you're eating the body and blood of Jesus, isn't that right, cannibal? So we can talk about that. But then I went to college where we are studying the Bible, and like more than half of the things I learned in Sunday school were wrong according mm-hmm. to what these PhDs are telling me and what these books I'm reading are telling me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, why was I taught that in church? Why doesn't this connect? Well, there's this translation, there's that translation, there's the way to look at this, there's this certain denomination, there's that denomination, there's these kinds of people. And I'm like, okay, well, if I can't trust the church who I went to Sunday school, and I can't trust all these different people who are translating and omitting things, or I'm gonna learn how to read this myself.
Right.
So that's the reason why I studied Greek and Hebrew in the beginning, Old and New Testament, then Aramaic, as some of the Old Testament's in Aramaic, and then got into like Phoenician, Moabite, Akkadian, Ugaritic, very cool, like. If you look at, I can do the alphabet for you, but it's like impressions, not hieroglyphics. I never studied hieroglyphics, although I would want to, but it's like they would take a, I don't know, like a stick, and they would make lines and triangles and connections and those were letters and they were like little things. So I got to study that. It was pretty cool. The code I got to like read these things and it was pretty cool. But I realized, like what you just said, when you're reading this, some of the stuff, even if you know the Hebrew and Greek, you're like, ooh, that could be taken a couple different ways. And then I thought in English, things could be taken a couple ways because somebody could say something that is so offensive to one person, but to another person, it's like, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. So it's the how it's said and whatnot. And things in writing are even worse, as you know, because you could read somebody's text and have no idea
right
what they were feeling or what their facial expressions, what their body mannerisms were when they sent that text. So you've just got to interpret it the way you're going to interpret it.
Right.
So when you're reading stuff like this, it's like, you've got to know more than just the alphabet. You've got to know what the mindset was at the time, what the culture was like at the time. You've got to learn what the socioeconomic status of the different people were at the time, the one who wrote it.
Context.
And so then that was what my master's program was understanding context specifically of this one region in Canaan. So pretty much Old Testament, not New Testament at this point, of why people said certain things, why they used certain symbols, why they used certain metaphors, analogies, and whatnot. And I was fascinated by it. I love that. My PhD was actually going to be specifically in 1 Samuel. There's a verse where the king Saul, this is the guy before David, his throne has been taken from him. He's in battle with the Philistines. The prophet Samuel has died. That was the person that Saul would go to for wisdom and advice. He goes to a witch and says, can you raise Samuel from the dead? And she's able to do it. And I'm like, crap, that's in the Bible? That means I have to actually believe that there are witches and there's being able to raise somebody from the dead. Because if I'm going to say I believe this.
Right.
Right? So things like that just fascinated me. All that to say, the people with power, and this is what the Book of Eli is. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
You would love it, with Denzel Washington.
Oh, okay.
The whole concept is like what Hitler did. They got rid of all books so that you had no reference. So the generations growing up would have no idea about Huckleberry Finn or about racism or about anything. It was just whatever these leaders told you, that was it. And this one, like, leader dictator person wants to find a Bible because wants to be able to use that for power to tell other people this is from God and this is what God is and this is what this says, and he wants to control that. So he tries to find the Bible at any cost, and I'll leave it there, but you should see it. It's a good one and you would really like it, I think. Mila, what's her name? No, what's the girl's name from that 70s show?
Mila Kunis?
Yes, Mila Kunis is in it. Denzel Washington's the main guy. Gary Oldman's the bad guy. It's good cast. It's really cool. But all that to say, religion is power, because what is religion? Religion is following a structure that makes you feel safe. And because you are safe in this structure, anything that attacks that structure or stands against that structure or goes opposite of that structure is a threat, and that's why you have these holy wars, or at the very least, ostracization of people who come into your structure that aren't like you.
Right. That's a worldview. And it's interesting that you were talking about, you connected like religion to the whole like consumption of mummies. I think a lot of it had to do with like, they didn't see that the people that were dead in those tombs as people, because they're different from them. And so it's kind of easy to kind of write it off as not cannibalism, they're not people. Additionally, linguistics is great. And it made me think about like the Quran and how it's like in Arabic, and the whole tradition with the Quran is to be able to recite it from memory. And that's how it doesn't, like, it maintains its translation from the time that it was written, which I thought was really interesting, because then I also learned in class that the Greek and like Roman writings that were lost to time because of the Catholic Church during the Dark Ages were found again because of the people that the Catholic Church employed to go share Catholicism. Those people ended up finding Arabic scholars that were preserving the Greek and Roman manuscripts. And that brought back, you know, the age of like education again and the Renaissance and the Enlightenment and all that. And it was just kind of ironic how like the Catholic Church was trying to keep the Dark Ages going and instead rejuvenated education again, because Arabic scholars were the ones that were preserving these materials that weren't even from their area, and they still saw it as like significant and important. Mm-hmm. And it still carries on with the Quran, and I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, the Hebrews and the Arabs, they both have to recite, like the Hebrews have to recite the Torah, and the Arabs have to recite, is it the entire Quran or just the...
They like memorize it. It's like part of the process.
So that is a beautiful thing, because you're keeping your culture and your identity ongoing. And even Jews that I know who aren't religious at all still hold to like the Day of Atonement and reading, because it's who they are. Whether or not they are expecting a Messiah or believe in God, this is who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found that interesting, because I would think, how can you recite something that's clearly saying there's God, but you don't necessarily believe in God? It's because that is so much of who they are as a people. It's like, that's kind of beautiful.
No, absolutely. That's why it made me think of that. But linguistics is dope. I work at the linguistics department at CCLB.
Ah.
So it was very interesting what you were saying.
Yeah. Actually, every now and again, I do the alphabets of the languages that I learn so that I don't forget.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So if you ever see my notes, like at work, you'll see like I'm taking notes, but then all of a sudden you'll see like the Hebrew alphabet. Take notes and then you see the Greek alphabet. I'm taking notes and then you see the Ugaritic alphabet. The Akkadian one, which is the Akkadian one's like, oh, it's tough to memorize. It's so many different characters, but you see all these, and they just look like scribbles,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, Greek looks like Latin letters, you know, but for the most part. But, you know, when you have Hebrew, it's like a lot of squiggly lines. And then when you have Ugaritic and Akkadian, which are triangles and lines and arrows, it's like, what the heck is going on
here? Right. I tried to teach myself Russian for a while, and I really liked it, and Greek. And then I tried to learn German. German I stuck with longer. But,
When I was in high school, I did French. And then I did sign language in junior college.
That's great.
I remember three phrases in French, and I mean a very few things in sign language. I wish I would have kept with sign language.
Yeah.
Don't need French. We went to Paris and we did just fine speaking English, but sign language is cool because there are people who are hearing impaired or who are deaf that you want to be able to communicate with, and that's easy to learn.
I edit videos for the ASLD department.
Do you sign?
No, but I learned a lot through doing it and like making like accurate captioning, because we have LSM at the school. So it's like Mexican Sign Language, which is really cool. It's like one of the only classes of its kind at CSULB.
Cool.
And I edited our promotional video for it. And it was just so nice to be a part of like a community that I can't even really communicate with. And they're just, it was just awesome. It's like a lot of like language barriers, but we're still finding a way to represent the group in an effective way. So.
Yeah, I still know the alphabet, but and like some of the basic meeting you phrases and thank you and please and some of those things. But when people are like really going and signing, I want to be like, there was a minute where I could like, whoa, I actually know kind of what they're saying. This is
right.
Whereas now it's like I got like maybe three words out of that entire.
I could show you sunset and sunrise. Well, that's pretty much.
This one?
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, as always, I love these conversations. I love learning. I love getting weirded out. I love, you know, asking you to go see a movie because I think it's really cool. Oh, I meant to tell you, I saw the one that you suggested last year. I forgot to tell you.
What movie was it? I say a lot of things.
Yeah, I gotta go back and look at it.
Okay. Remember liking it?
Well, I cheated. I did the Cliff Notes of it.
Oh.
Because it wasn't like on Netflix or whatnot, but there was, I was actually going through YouTube, and I love going through like the, what do you call the vines,
mm-hmm.
right? And there was a clip of one that I was like, oh, this was the thing that Charisma was telling me about. And so I saw a couple vines of it, and I can't remember the name of it, but I will get it. It's I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna find it. I will have this for you the next time we're on the radio station for the Scott Snake, so that you can go and vine yourself.
Vine?
Find the vine.
Vine? But do you mean like the old app? Vine?
There's an app called Vine.
Oh man. Okay. We should wrap it up here. That was too much to go into.
I thought that was a new thing.
Vine?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's Threads. Or Treads. Thread. I don't know, man. You know what? This is what happened. I had a MySpace, barely.
Starting a sentence with "I had a MySpace."
Facebook, you know, beat out MySpace. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like Blu-ray beat out high definition.
Yeah, right.
So I got on Facebook, then got on Instagram, and was on Twitter barely, and then I quit. I'm not on X, so I have Instagram and I have Facebook. So all these other Snapchats, this, that's, all those, I know nothing about them, not on them. People are like, oh, TikTok, I don't have an account. And then I get bummed out because somebody sends me a video that's funny and it's like, create your TikTok account. I'm like, no, I just want to see the video.
You can watch the reels on Instagram, but it's going to take like 2 weeks for you to catch up. So.
Oh, really? That's when it comes out? That's funny.
Yeah.
That's a smart way to do it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people do that.
But I'm just like, I'm over it. I don't need to know what this is.
I'll tell you about it. So
hey, Charisma, can you open this link for me? Anyway, as always, we are so grateful to you who listen. Charisma, it is always a pleasure chatting with you.
And you too.
And we hope you guys have a safe weekend, an awesome Friday. I'm going to be here doing movie night with the community. So if you want to see Hidden Figures, you're invited.
Nice.
But other than that, take care. Oh, we don't have a song.
Oh.
Walk Like an Egyptian.
I was going to say. Nice. Yeah. We did a very.
All right. So we're going to get that queued up for you. In the meantime, any well wishes for the people?
Yeah. Take care of yourself. Drink water. Don't eat any mummies, please.
Take care of yourself. Drink water. Don't eat any mummies. I never thought I'd hear that sentence.
Yeah. You're welcome.
All righty. Yes. Take care. Have a good one. Cigarette.
like an Egyptian.